This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com. Hey, good morning, everybody. How are you guys doing today? Are you guys pretty mellow or are you rowdy? Oh, mellow. Okay, good. Oh, we'll have to change that. Well, it's been about a month now since my wife Amanda and I welcomed our third child into this world, Alexander Dwayne Hodge. Oh, that's it right there, yeah. Makes you feel warm all over, you know? And in case you missed it, I'll tell you, he's been a great, some of you have asked me, you know, how you doing? I'm doing great. I'm getting a lot of sleep. So I'm doing great. But now that makes two girls and one boy. We're still out of balance a little bit, but this is it. So we're just going to have to learn to, we're going to get a couple dogs. And anyway, but the other thing that this makes official is the fact that now the parents are outnumbered. So pray for us. Would you do that? Okay. Anyway, you know, it's funny because having a newborn, some of you know this because you've been in this place, you've had a few even, many of you, having a newborn in your house definitely affects the way you tend to think about life, doesn't it? You begin to think about things, and for me, I mean, I think I've probably spent more time thinking about a lot of different things in my life, things like my kids' lives, their future, the future of my life, you know, my children. I mean, I think about Alex, you know, my son's life, and what's his life going to look like? What will his future look like? What type of relationship will we have? You know, or even my daughters. I think a lot about my daughters. You know, what will my relationship with them look like? Or, you know, what kind of, you know, what's their journey of life going to look like? You know, who are they going to marry when they're like 30? You know, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you? You know, those kind of, you know, the types of questions that start rattling around in our heads when babies start showing up. You know what I mean? Or even those of us, maybe you don't have kids, but you still think of these kind of things. I mean, spouse or no spouse. I mean, I think we probably all find ourselves asking these kind of questions, don't we? Questions about the future. And see, I think part of the reason that humanity seems so intrigued with the future is because of that yearning on the inside of us that I think we all have deep down inside to really make a difference in our lifetime or even beyond our lifetime. I mean, when you start asking questions about your life, and when you start asking things like, you know, what's going to be left of my life after I die? Or you start asking questions like, hey, you know, when I'm long gone, I mean, what type of impact will my life continue to make once my physical appearance in this world is gone? What kind of impact? I mean, those kind of questions really begin impacting us, don't they? I mean, they really affect us, especially in terms of how we look at the future. I mean, I'm reminded of a quote that I heard recently. I thought this was really good. It goes like this. When it comes to the future, there are three kinds of people. Those who let it happen, those who make it happen, and those who wonder what happened. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I mean, it's so true. There are those who, you know, those who let it happen, just let it happen, those who make it happen, and then those who scratch their heads wondering what in the heck just happened. I mean, it's so true. This past April, I had an opportunity to be a part of an event called Q. And Q is a place where innovators, church leaders, social entrepreneurs, and various cultural leaders come together for just some great discussion about how the church can do a better job at impacting our culture. And one of the presenters there was a guy by the name of Kevin Kelly. Kevin Kelly is known as, I think his official title is Senior Maverick at Wired Magazine, a magazine that he helped start back in, I think it was 1993. He's authored a couple of books. I mean, he's quite an amazing guy. He's a follower of Jesus, pretty much an all-around intelligent guy who really has some interesting thoughts about the future. And so at Q, Kevin Kelly shared a conversation with everyone about that exact topic, about the future, and he really posed some interesting questions and scenarios that have really stuck with me over these last few months. It was pretty amazing. One of those thoughts had to do with our lives and what humanity might look like 1,000 years from now. 1,000 years. Which, if you're like me, I mean, seems so far out there that it just feels overwhelming sometimes to even try to comprehend 1,000 years from now. And almost, I think, sometimes we think maybe it's just a waste of time to even really think about it that much because it's so far. But one of the things that Kevin suggested was that 1,000 years really may not be as far off as we think it is. Because, see, if you take the average lifespan, let's just say 72, if you take the average lifespan of 72, and if you take that lifespan and multiply it by 13, okay, you're pretty close to covering a span of 1,000 years. And the picture he painted was this. This is really powerful. With a chain of outstretched hands, each about 70 years long, it would take only 13 people, fingertip to fingertip, to have them stretch their lives out over 1,000 years. 13. Which means that the next 1,000 years is only really 13 generations away. And when you start looking at it that way, suddenly it doesn't seem so distant anymore, does it? And so the question that I posed earlier of, you know, what is my life going to look like after I'm long gone, suddenly shifts a little bit and becomes more of a question of, you know, what would my life look like right now if I knew that there was some way that I could really impact others in a significant way, way beyond just my 70 or 80 years that I have here on earth? I mean, how can I live my life in a way that it could possibly be felt somehow 13 generations from now? Or forget 13, maybe just 2, 3, 4, 5 generations from now. How can I live my life in such a way? Because see, the other alternative, and we all know this, the other alternative to this kind of life is to live a life that's forgotten as soon as you leave this earth. Or maybe shortly thereafter. We know these past couple of weeks, we've been looking at the life of a man who certainly lived a life that has impacted millions and millions of people long after his death, way beyond just 13 generations. I mean, for thousands and thousands of years, it's a man who's been considered the savior of his people. He was passionate about racial equality. He led what could be considered the first anti-slavery movement that this world has ever seen. And of course, I'm talking about who? All right, 4 of you remember. That is so encouraging. Wow. Did I mention the podcast? You can download the talks and listen. Okay, anyway. Moses. Of course, talking about Moses. And look, here we are now in the year 2007 learning from this man's life that ended a few thousand years ago. Isn't that amazing? And of course, what a life it was, huh? I mean, I tell you, what a journey this guy Moses had. I mean, here he's born in Egypt during a time when the Hebrew people were living and working as slaves under the Egyptians. He's left for dead in the Nile River. He ends up getting rescued out of all people by Pharaoh's daughter, who ends up, you know, making him a prince in Egypt. And then one day, as Moses is older, he goes out one day and he sees an Egyptian beating the daylights out of a Hebrew and out of one of his own people, and he gets really mad and he ends up killing the Egyptian, and he finds himself in just major, major trouble. Pharaoh is now after him. He's going to take his life. He's in trouble. So he takes off to the middle of nowhere and spends the next 40 years of his life hiding out and basically starting a new life for himself, until one day God shows up and says, "Hey, Moses, listen, you're the man to deliver my people from Egypt." And of course, Moses freaks out, doesn't he? He freaks out. He argues with God, tries to get God to change his mind. And finally, after making this real obvious decision to get unstuck by letting go of his past, Moses finally says, "Okay, God, I'll go. I'll go." And so God uses Moses to bring the Israelites out of captivity, out of slavery in Egypt. And his life, the life of Moses, is fueled forward. And he sees all kinds of miracles, all kinds of great things happen. And he's fully engaged. He's seizing the day. He's hearing God's voice. He's obeying him. And then one day, Pharaoh pops back into the picture. Pharaoh changes his mind and decides to go after Moses and his people. And so he pulls his armies together. He goes out after him, and God performs this amazing miracle. He splits open the Red Sea, doesn't he? He splits it open and allows the Israelites to walk through it. And the Bible actually says it was dry ground. And then the Egyptians, of course, think, "Hey, this is going to work out well for us too. So let's go get them." So the Egyptians and all the armies go after the Israelites, and just in the moment when all of the armies are in the middle of the sea, God and the waters go back together, and every one of the Egyptians drowned. I mean, so here you have the Israelites on the other side of the sea. Okay, a major miracle has just occurred right here. Pharaoh and his armies are no longer a threat. The Israelites are in a pretty good place, and what's left before Moses, what's left before these people is the future. It's the future. And a promise from God that there's a new land that he's going to guide them to and he's going to take them to. So as we learned these past couple of weeks, Moses learned some things about getting unstuck, didn't he? Oh man, he learned some things. I mean, he learned how to cooperate with God. He learned how to cooperate with the kind of change that God desired to bring into his life. And he learned how to let go of the past, which we all know is so much easier said than done, isn't it? But he learned how to let go of the past. And we see that he understood what it meant to truly engage the present, to truly live this carpe diem life, this life of just seizing the day. And now here he is, standing in front of him is the future. And I would guess that it was about this time in his life when Moses began coming to the realization that he now was a part of something so much bigger than himself. And so Moses begins thinking about the future. I mean, he starts thinking about his future. He starts thinking about the future of his people. And not only that, but I think he begins thinking about the future of those that he would never even know, those future generations of men and women who had owed their freedom to this man who lived a long, long time ago that their parents told them about, and their parents, this man by the name of Moses. I'll tell you, the reason I suspect that the future was on the mind of Moses was because of what we begin seeing in the story as the story continues to unfold. In fact, I want to take you today to the book of Exodus. If you have your Bibles, you can go there, or you can watch the screens here, because what you begin to see in Exodus is a new person sort of arrives on the scene, this young man by the name of Joshua. Everyone say Joshua. Joshua shows up on the scene, and we begin to see Joshua more and more throughout Exodus. In fact, starting right around Exodus chapter 17, the very first time we see Joshua is when the Israelites are out in the wilderness and become threatened with attack from a group of people known as the Amalekites. And so Moses takes this young man named Joshua, and he makes him the commander of his armies, and he has him lead the battle against the Amalekites. Let me show you the story. Exodus chapter 17, Moses says, okay, Joshua, you're the man. I want you to go. I want you to lead this battle. And we're told in verse 10, so Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a nearby hill. Now, this is an intriguing story, okay? So you've got this young man named Joshua who takes the soldiers and he leads them out to battle. Meanwhile, okay, all the old guys go up to the top of the hill to smoke their pipes. No, I'm just seeing if you're awake. Okay. Really, it doesn't say that. Okay, anyway. So it goes on to tell us, Exodus chapter 17, look at this. Listen to this. So the battle's going on. The battle begins, and it goes on to say this. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Verse 12, Moses' arms soon became so tired he could no longer hold them up. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. Then they stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands. So his hands held steady until sunset. And verse 13 says, as a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. Man, there's some interesting dynamics at work here in the story, isn't there? I have some interesting ideas here. I mean, think about it. Moses understands that there is no way that he can personally lead the army in battle. He knows, hey, I'm old now. I just don't think I have it in me to lead this army where they need to go. So you know what? I need someone younger. So what does he do? Well, he goes out. He finds Joshua. And so Joshua goes into battle, and then Joshua quickly realizes something too. He realizes that as much as Moses might have needed him, that he also needs Moses. And suddenly the two of them become extremely dependent upon each other, don't they? I mean, the old needs the young, and the young needs the old. Well, that's not the last time we hear of Joshua In fact, what we begin to see as we move forward in Exodus is that this dependency that the two have on each other continues, and it continues to get stronger and stronger, and it doesn't just continue to get stronger, it becomes a major facet of both of their lives. We see Moses, he begins pulling Joshua closer and closer to him. When Moses goes up to Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments from God, no one goes with him except for Joshua. And even then, Joshua can only go part of the way. But he picks Joshua. Further on in the story, when it's time to send the 12 spies into the promised land, who does Moses choose? He chooses Joshua to be one of the 12. And then we begin to see this journey. We begin to see this journey happening in the story of how this leader, Moses, begins this process of mentoring and reproducing and apprenticing this young leader named Joshua. And over and over and over again we see it. Moses empowers Joshua. Moses gives him this experience, this hands-on. He says, you take it, Joshua, you go. He shares his life. He shares his responsibilities with Joshua. When Moses needed a personal, a right-hand guy, who does he choose? He chooses Joshua. I mean, Joshua became the man. And so this relationship continues. And Joshua's receiving encouragement. He's receiving affirmation from Moses. Until one day, we read something that is just absolutely beautiful, found in a couple books over in Deuteronomy chapter 31. I want to show you this. This is really great. It says, Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 1, when Moses had finished giving these instructions to all the people of Israel, referring to all the laws, the Ten Commandments and the laws that he gave to the people, he said, I am now 120 years old, and I'm no longer able to lead you. The Lord has told me, you will not cross the Jordan River, but the Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy the nations living there, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua will lead you across the river just as the Lord promised. And he goes on to say in verse 6, so be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid and do not panic before them, for the Lord your God will personally go ahead of you. He will neither fail you nor abandon you. And then we see this little shift here taking place. It says, then Moses, in verse 7, it says, then Moses called for Joshua. And as all of Israel watched, he said to him, be strong and courageous. Joshua, for you will lead these people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors he would give them. You are the one who will divide it among them as their grants of land. And then he says this, these comforting words that I can only imagine Joshua needed so badly. He says, do not be afraid or discouraged, Joshua. For the Lord will personally go ahead of you. He will be with you. He will never fail you or abandon you. And what we have here is one of the most beautiful pictures of empowerment and affirmation seen just about anywhere in the scriptures. I mean, Moses, who had been the only leader this group of people have ever known in their lives, the only leader, I mean, the only one that's been speaking into their lives, suddenly recognizes that it's time. And he recognizes, so he calls forth that person that he has poured his life into, that he has invested into, and before all the people, he lays his hands upon Joshua. And he says to him, Joshua, you are now the man. So be strong. Have courage. Don't be afraid. God will go before you. I mean, what an amazing moment. But I think the thing that sticks out to me the most in this whole journey of this relationship between Moses and Joshua is how much they both needed each other. I mean, this was not a one-sided relationship here, was it? I mean, you see two human beings, two people who were so dependent upon one another. I mean, Moses knew. He knew that he needed Joshua. He knew that if there was any way that his life was going to expand his influence beyond his own lifetime, he knew that he needed Joshua. And you know what? Joshua knew that he needed Moses, because without that voice of wisdom and that experience and that empowerment, Joshua would not have had a chance at becoming the kind of leader that God was calling him to be. I mean, in essence, what we see in this story is this. You might want to write this down, because this is pretty impacting. What we see in the story is this. Moses was faithful to Joshua. And we see how Joshua was faithful to Moses. And we see how both were faithful to God. I mean, that sums it up right there. This whole story of Moses and Joshua, I mean, in those three phrases right there, Moses was faithful to Joshua. Moses invested in him. Moses empowered him. Moses poured into his life. And Joshua was faithful to Moses. Joshua listened to the voice of Moses. Joshua heard his voice, and he allowed Moses to empower him and pour into his life, and he was faithful to Moses. And then, of course, we see in the end that both were faithful to God. And I'll tell you, because of that, Moses, I'll tell you what, his impact continued and went on and on and on for generation after generation. I mean, far beyond what I would imagine Moses would have ever imagined. I mean, same thing with Joshua. I mean, the way that God used Joshua was absolutely mind-blowing. I love this short scripture that's found over in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 9. It says this: "Now Joshua, son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him, doing just as the Lord commanded Moses." I love that. Did you hear that? "So the people of Israel obeyed him just as the Lord commanded," not Joshua, but commanded Moses. Verse 10, "There has never been another prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." Wow. I mean, imagine being someone of that caliber. Imagine it being said of you one day that's a person that God knew that person face to face. I mean, see, the story of Moses is just amazing. And I'll tell you, if you've been here these last 3 weeks, then you know about those obstacles in the life of Moses. You know about those challenges he faced. I mean, it's mind-blowing that he was able to overcome those challenges. I mean, the fact that Moses was able to get unstuck in his life like he did and allow God to bring the kind of change inside of him that took him from being a man who was embarrassed and ashamed to a man, to a leader, I should say, who led God's people in a way that they had never seen before. It's amazing. Think about this story, though. There's something within Moses that understood some things about living. And there was something inside of Moses that understood some things about the future. For example, he understood that creating the future was not about building a great building or about building, you know, about building a great monument or about simply building great riches or great wealth. I mean, Moses understood that if he was going to extend his influence beyond his life, that it wasn't going to be by building all of those things, but it was going to be by building people. By building people. And it was by finding that person to pour his life into, and not just in some casual, off-the-cuff way. "Well, you know, if I get around to it, or once in a while I'll shoot off an email to encourage this person." No, he knew that it was going to be by intentionally investing and mentoring and empowering and reproducing who he was in the life of someone else. I tell you, this is a story that hits home for me in just an unbelievable way. As a matter of fact, the more I read and the more I studied about this life of Moses and his leadership, the more I realized that I knew a Moses. Most of you know the story of how I ended up here. For those of you who don't, it all started not too many years ago. 33 years ago I was born, which was a very short time ago, right? Yeah, okay. My life started about 33 years ago. I was adopted. In case you don't know that, adopted into the home of my parents. Both my sister and I were both adopted. People ask us sometimes, "Are you guys blood brother and sister?" And we're not, although we have that kind of relationship. And so anyway, when I was around 4 or 5 years old, my dad moved here to Aurora to become the pastor of this church right here, which at that time was known as Aurora First Assembly of God Church. And for the next 25 years, my dad led this church through all kinds of challenges, all kinds of obstacles, some pretty rough times, but also some really, really great times as well. And so that's what I grew up around. I grew up around this life of a leader, a man who was learning, who was growing, who was impacting a lot of lives, but also a man who, I think whether he realized it or not, really began empowering me as his son. In fact, as I thought about the life of Moses and Joshua and how he lived and how he empowered Joshua, I couldn't help but think of just these amazing correlations between the relationship that Moses had with Joshua and the relationship that my dad had with me. And not to say that, you know, I try to putting myself in this category of Joshua or my dad's life in category of Moses, but there's some amazing correlations. I mean, for example, that empowerment in my life began at a very young age. In fact, I can still remember as a young child being awakened early in the morning with the sound of my dad's voice just praying over my life. And I can remember sometimes I would wake up and I would just, I would literally feel teardrops dropping from his eyes and hitting my arm and wondering what was going on, you know, and his hand would just be rested on top of my head as he prayed prayers over his family, over his son, over his daughter. I mean, little did I know at that time that what was happening was this thing called empowerment was taking place right there. Of course, as is the case, I think, with most dads and sons, you know, as I got older, our relationship began changing. We had some tough times. We, you know, I was, you know, a little rebellious. I know it's hard to imagine. You know, I had really, my ADD was just out of control and in school and really struggling. But as I began maturing in my life, I watched our relationship really take some big shifts. And I'll never forget one time when I was a teenager. Probably the most empowering moment that I can remember as a son and with my dad was a time when my dad said to me, I don't know how old I was, it was in my teen years, but I remember him saying to me, Scott, he says, look at me, son, listen, if you will devote your life right now, starting today, if you will devote your life to learning about leadership, son, you will go on to become a greater leader than I will ever be in my life. And Scott, I'm telling you, God is going to use you in some pretty significant ways. And, you know, being young at that time, you really don't believe that necessarily. You know, you question it, and I'm not even sure at the time I knew what he meant. But I'll tell you what, there was something inside of me that believed those words. And so I did what he said, and I'll tell you, starting at that moment in my life, I'll never forget that moment. I walked away, and I went, and I tried to find, this was before the internet, which I know some of you think that's so far, a long time ago. but I'll never forget, starting at that moment, I began devoting my life to this thing called leadership. And I'll tell you, I mean, the advantage we have nowadays with technology and the books and the magazines that are out there that teach on leadership, it just blows my mind. Those things were not, they were started to become available when I was a teenager. But before that, the generations before us, they didn't have that like we have it. And so we're at a huge advantage in our life. So anyway, I tell you what, I began devoting my life to this thing called leadership. Not because I wanted to be a better leader than my dad, but because there was something inside of me that really believed that there was a reason I was here on this earth, and that God really did want to use me to do something impacting in this world. I really believed that. And so I would do everything. I would do everything I could to grow in my leadership. I'd listen to tapes, to CDs. I would read books. Everything I could get my hands on, I would just to drink it up as fast as I could. Well, fast forward a little bit. In the year 2000, my dad led this church right here through, I would say, the biggest step of faith they'd ever taken before, the purchase and construction of this campus right here, this building that we're sitting in, the 16 acres of land the church purchased, took a huge step of faith. And I'll tell you, that was a very interesting season for my dad during that time. Some of you know this. On the surface, I think things look pretty good. I mean, here we are in this new building, this new campus. I mean, it was something that he had dreamt about for so many years. And it was finally coming to fruition. Well, about a year into it, something happened. My dad came to this stark realization in his life that although things look pretty good on the surface, that things were actually ill on the inside. And he began to realize that although things might look healthy, the fact is there was a lot of sickness on the inside, and the church that he was leading was just not making the impact that he believed God wanted it to make. The church was declining. The church wasn't growing. People were leaving. There was, giving was going down. I mean, it's like when you heard a story of someone coming to know Christ, it was almost like a shock, you know, like, wow, that happened, you know? And it shouldn't be that way in a church, you know? And so, I mean, things were just not, there was division in some of the leadership ranks of the church. I mean, things were just not healthy. And the more he prayed and the more that he kept just taking those times of being quiet before God, the more he kept hearing this question over and this statement over and over in his mind, and I'll never forget it, the time he told me this. He said, Scott, you know, it's like I keep hearing God say to me, Larry, one day when you stand before me, the question is not going to be how comfortable were your people in their Christianity. No. The question that I'm going to ask you one day will be this: what did you do with what I gave you? And it was then that my dad realized that something had to change. And not just change as in a little tweaking here and there. We're gonna add this program, or we're gonna do this thing or that little thing. No, I'm talking about change as in major overhaul and shift in how we do church, why we do church, who we're doing church for. The only problem was that my dad really didn't know where to begin. I mean, as you and I know, when you've been doing things a certain way for so many years, you just kind of get stuck doing it that way. I mean, while he knew that things needed to change, he just didn't know how to go about making that change. And so to make a long story short, my dad ended up calling me and inviting me to come out and work alongside him here at the church, which was something that neither one of us would have ever imagined in a million years. I did not want to come back to this church. I mean, a visit would be okay, but I did not want to come back and work here. I tell people, no way, I'm not going to, I can't work for my dad. Are you kidding me? We kill each other. No way. I mean, in fact, my plan was to go start a church. That was my plan, was I'm going to go be a church planter, and I'm going to start a church. I had all these friends that were planting churches, and well, that's what I'm going to do. We're going to go to New York, Manhattan, we're going to start a church. That's what we're going to do. And in fact, my dad used to say to me, he said, well, you know, Scott, one day I'll retire, and I'll come work for you. I'll be like your pastoral care guy. I'll do visitations and stuff for you, okay? And we used to talk about that. And so anyway, after this season of just wrestling, some of you know what it's like when God's pulling on your heart to do something, like Moses, right? And you're wrestling with God and you're arguing with God. You're saying, God, please don't make me go. You know, and finally, God won. And Amanda and I, we moved our family back here after being away for about 10 years in Minnesota and Oklahoma. And God led us back here. And in early 2002, my dad and I began leading this church through a rapid, rapid journey of change and transition, which, of course, is never easy. I mean, change is never easy. We've seen that in this series. Change is not easy. But here's what people don't realize. They think change is hard for them. Do you realize change is hardest for the one leading? I mean, change is not easy. And I'll tell you, there were some tough days for us in those days. I mean, there were actually a handful of times, and I'll never forget sitting with my dad and him saying to me, Scott, do you realize this could be our last Sunday to gather as a church? I mean, that's how bad things were. Sacrifices that were made, forfeited salaries. I mean, I there were some of us who went months and months and months with no pay. My dad went over a year, no pay, took his entire retirement, dumped it back into the church so that we could pay our mortgage. I mean, it was tough. Yet at the same time, something really, really big was beginning to happen. See, while God was transforming a church, he was also transforming my dad. He was changing his life. And for the first time in his life, my dad felt more fulfilled and passionate about his calling than he had his entire life and career in ministry. And there were times, in fact, I remember specifically just a couple years into this journey of transition that my dad said to me, Scott, listen to me, I'm serious about this. I am so convinced that this is what we're supposed to be doing that I would die for it. And I never heard him say those words before. I'd never heard him say that he would die for the church he pastored or for something he was leading. I never heard those words before. Well, finally, about 2.5 years into it, we finally begin seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. People begin showing up, you know, and the church began growing. We began reaching unchurched people. We would talk to people, hey, where did you go before here? Well, we didn't go anywhere. Yes, you know, we're reaching people who don't go to church. Our finances slowly started making their way up this direction instead of that direction. And overall, things were finally starting to look a little bit better. And I'll never forget one Sunday morning in particular, October 9th, 2004, to be exact. I just finished leading our time in worship on the stage, and my dad had just finished leading us in communion that morning, and Ted was standing right here. You guys know Ted. Ted was standing right here on the stage. He was teaching. And while Ted was speaking, I'll never forget standing in the back and looking over and seeing my dad sitting right back in the far back in one of those last chairs. And I'll never forget looking at him and just having this overwhelming sense in my heart that we were now on the other side of it all. And that it was no longer about, well, one day the orchard is going to be this. It was now, this is who we are. God has breathed his life into this church. God has breathed. He has moved. He has done something miraculous in this church. And so I'll never forget, I walked over to my dad as he was sitting there, and I tapped him on his shoulder. I said, Dad, come here. And I led him back into the back room behind our production booth back there in that welcome team room. I'll never forget, I pulled the door shut and I grabbed his arm and said, Dad, listen to me. Look at me for a second. You got to hear this. Do you see what's happening here? Dad, can you believe this? Something is happening. I mean, do you see all these people who are showing up? I mean, all the sacrifices, Dad, all the sacrifices, all the things that you and Mom gave up for this church, all the hard decisions, all the people who became angry at change and all the hurtful words that were spoken, all of those things. God, Dad, do you see that something is happening here? God is doing something. And together, from the back of this auditorium, my dad and I shared this amazing moment of thanksgiving to God as we looked over this church community. And there was just something inside of me at that moment. It's hard to put into words, but there was a joy in my heart and the heart of my dad over what God was doing. And you talk about grateful. Man, you can say the word, but when you feel it, you know you feel it. And I'll never forget standing there. I was so grateful despite all the struggles and all the hard decisions and all the unpopular moves. I was so grateful that my dad had invited me on this journey that I didn't even really want to go on to begin with. But I was so grateful. So grateful to witness that transformation of his life and what God had done inside of him, and also so grateful for that quiet moment of celebration that we shared in the back of this room on that morning, October 9th, 2004. Well, little did I know that would be our last time standing together in this room. Because as most of you know, it was 2 days later, on October 12th, 2004, that my dad suffered a major heart attack and died instantly. And you know, you think in your life you're moving on. You start talking about it, you realize it's still pretty fresh. And those of you who know, those of you who've lost loved ones, I mean, I've just come to the conclusion there's no easy way to lose anyone. Whether it be sudden or whether it be over a period of time. But I'm going to tell you, there was something about losing my dad so abruptly that just messed me up bad. You know, it's like he's here 1 minute, everything looks great, he seems to be doing well. I mean, you know, you see this gleam in his eye. I mean, you guys know, those of you who knew him, you saw it. Healthy, strong, full of passion and life. And then boom, the next minute, he's gone. I mean, how do you deal with that? Now, how do you process that? And I'll never forget, it was the first Sunday after he passed away, and you know, your mind is just going crazy because, you know, you're like, 1 week ago today, you know, he was here, and he was fine, you know, and we were talking and hanging out and sitting at Starbucks talking about how we could work really hard to change this community together, you know, and then a week later he's gone and you're burying him under the ground, you know? I'll never forget that first Sunday afterwards, one of our elders came to me. He said, Scott, he says, you know, you're the man. We want you to lead this thing. And I remember just saying, you know what, I can't even talk about it. Would you just give me some time? Let's let 3 months go by. I don't want to talk about it. Because right now, I just want to grieve over the loss of my dad. And so a few months later, the church asked me to come on board as their next pastor. And once again, after a lot of prayer and again, some wrestling with God, we said yes, we would do it, and I accepted God's call in my life to be here at the Orchard, and since that day, have done my best to lead this church in the mission that God has called us to. And I'll tell you, God's been good, hasn't he? God has been so good. I'll tell you, the work that God began through my dad, we're seeing it continue here. And we're seeing lives continue to be impacted beyond his life. I mean, if you would have told me, first of all, if you would have told me a couple years ago that Scott, you guys are going to baptize 100 people at one time, you know what? I would have ran away from you. I would have booked it, man, because I know what that means. That means growth, and growth means some problems. It means being stretched and pulled out of your comfort zone. And I think it's hard sometimes. I mean, there's time, this event, the barbecue and baptism we just had, I mean, those are always great events for me, but they're also painful events. At the end of the night, after everybody's gone home, and I'm driving home by myself thinking about the night, it's so hard sometimes because you just wish so bad that Dad could be there to experience it and to see it. But then, you know, I keep getting drawn back to this life of Moses. I keep getting drawn back, and I remember that some of the greatest leaders in the world never actually saw the completion of their vision and their life's work. I mean, do you realize what that means? Do you realize that when you're living this kind of life, when you're living life like this, there's a high probability that you will never see the completion of your life's work. I mean, Moses didn't. You think about Moses. Moses didn't. No, man. In fact, he didn't even make it into the promised land. He saw it, and you know he dreamed about it, and he probably talked a lot about it, but he didn't step foot into it. I'll tell you, my dad, he saw. He saw the other side of this transition. He saw what God wanted to do. He had a taste. We talked about it. He saw it. He experienced it to a degree, but not nearly like you and I do today. And not nearly like you and I are going to experience it tomorrow and a month from now and a year from now. But you know what? In the last 2.5 years since my dad's death, I have watched his life impact more people than I am certain that his life had the opportunity to impact in his 60 years here on this earth. For example, about a year after he died, I coincidentally ran into a gentleman who came up to me, introduced himself to me. We didn't know each other. We start talking. He says, "Yeah, my name's Marshall Shelley. I'm one of the vice presidents at Christianity Today magazine." And he goes, tell me about your story. And so I begin to tell him about my dad. And at that time, it was only about a year. And so, you know, you're still emotional about it as like, that's changed, right? But, you know, we sat and we stood there and talked. I began to tell him the story. And he's just got tears going down his face. He says, "Scott, I'm going to help you get this story out because this could inspire a lot of pastors." And so I wrote an article for their magazine called Leadership, which ended up going out to over 100,000 pastors all over this world who read the story of what God has done in his life and in this place called The Orchard. I mean, just like that, 100,000 people. And then it goes on their website, and literally hundreds of thousands of people have read the story of what God has done here at The Orchard. And I'll tell you, since that time, God has used my dad. He's used our story to impact pastors and church leaders literally all over the world. All over. In fact, there's not a week that goes by, and now it's even more than that. I mean, it's literally hardly a day goes by when I don't receive some kind of email or phone call from a pastor or a church leader who wants to hear more. Man, you talk about heartache and you talk about frustration. I have pastors that call me and say, "Listen, I read your story and I am in a place of such discouragement in my life. And this article that you wrote gave me a shot in the arm. This story about your dad and his courageous leadership and the steps that you guys took has given me a shot in the arm and has helped me to make the decision to stick it out and to move forward." You know, I've spent time with numerous churches and staffs from all over the country. In fact, just last week, I spent time with a Baptist church in the area who came to me and said, "You know what, we are in the midst of transition, we're losing people, things are declining, but we know something has to change, we just don't know how to do it, would you be willing to coach us and help us a little bit?" And I'll tell you what really blows my mind when I begin to think about how God has used this whole thing is when I start thinking about how many people all of these pastors represent. When you begin to think about that 100,000 pastors and how many people they represent, or those hundreds of thousands who hit the website and read the story, how many people they represent, it just blows my mind. Next month, in fact, in a few weeks, I'm going to be speaking at a national conference called Innovate, a conference that pulls pastors from all over the country, and I've been asked to come and share the story of my dad and to share about the Orchard and the innovative ways that we're reaching people in our community. And I get to speak to over 1,000 pastors there and help however I can to equip them to better reach their communities. And see, this is how God is using the Orchard. This is how God, and look, please, I don't share these things with you to draw attention to me. Because I'm going to tell you, this is the most humbling thing I have ever experienced in my life. But I do share these things to brag about what God is doing. And to show you a very clear and close to home practical example of how one person's leadership and influence can go far beyond their lifetime. I mean, 2 years, 2.5 years, and look what God has done. You know, I think about my dad and how he poured and how he empowered and how he invested his life into me and into so many of your lives. And now here I am. It's up to me now to pour and to empower and to invest in the lives of all of you and whoever else God brings into my life. And so I can't help but to think, and this is so powerful to me, I can't help but think about how just as Moses was faithful to Joshua, that can also be said that Larry was faithful to Scott. And just as Joshua was faithful to Moses, I mean, my hope and my prayer is that everything I do in my life to lead this mission forward and the time that I spent serving alongside my dad, my hope and prayer is that that would be a testimony of how Scott was faithful to Larry. But more than anything, my biggest desire and my biggest hope is that it would be said, and it has been said of my dad, it continues to be said, that both were faithful to God. See, here's the thing. You have to understand that it's not easy to stand up here and share these things for so many reasons, not just because it's of the emotional side of it all. I got most of it out during the week, sitting in Starbucks writing, bawling my eyes out. You wouldn't believe how exhausted you feel after writing something like this. But I'll tell you, it's not easy because here's another reason it's not easy. It's because of how many people I know that did not have this kind of relationship with their dads. I know many of you sitting here today, you might be sitting here even thinking to yourself, you know what, Scott, yeah, your dad might have died, it might have been tragic, but you know what, you're lucky to have even had that. And you know what, you're right. I am so blessed and I'm so thankful. And as a matter of fact, three of my closest friends in life did not grow up with this kind of influence in their life from their father. One or two of them had no relationship at all with their dads. And so I know that's many of the stories of people even in this room right now. And I'll tell you, that breaks my heart. Every time I talk to someone who says, Scott, I didn't have that with my dad, man, I just want to hug them around the neck. And I want to say something that would just give them some kind of magical, you know, just fix it for them, you know? But here's what I need you to understand this morning. The moral of this story is not necessarily about a father and son relationship, as much as it is about the lives of two people, two human beings who were faithful to one another and to God. I mean, think about Moses and Joshua. We don't hear anything about Joshua's dad. I mean, Moses was not Joshua's father, we know that, but we do hear about this man named Moses who intentionally poured his life into Joshua. And so I want to encourage all of us today, and maybe you didn't grow up with that, maybe your dad's passed on, maybe you don't have that relationship in your life, and you're grieved over that, and it hurts you to this day. I want to encourage you and say to you this morning that it doesn't mean that there's not a Moses out there for you. It doesn't mean that there's not someone out there who can pour into your life and invest into you and give you what you need in your life. And so I want to challenge you and encourage all of us here to identify that Moses in our lives. To identify who it is that can pour that wisdom and that seasoning into your life. Because the fact is, listen, God has put a Moses, I believe, in every one of our lives. I believe God has put, in fact, probably several. I know for me, God has brought some into my life. In fact, since my dad's death, there's been a handful of of older seasoned pastors, because I'll tell you what, he was such a major voice in my life. He was my counselor, my mentor, my friend. I mean, you don't replace that. It's taken about three guys to replace that for me. And it might take some of you some time. It might take some creativity to identify them, but I'm going to tell you something. It's up to you to do it. It's up to you to approach them and to ask them to speak into your life. If you're sitting around and waiting for that Moses to show up in your life, you're probably going to miss it. And I know for me, it's required me to step out of my comfort zone and approach one man in particular, a pastor who's been pastoring for a very long time. He was friends with my dad. And me going to him and saying, you know what? I need your voice in my life. I need to be able to sit down with you. I need to be able to learn from you. I need to be able to hear where you succeeded in your life. Tell me about the failures. Tell me about the lessons learned. I need your wisdom in my life. And you know what he said to me? He said, you know what, Scott? I'll be happy to give you whatever I can. But you know what? I'm going to tell you something that you need to really hear closely, and that is that I want to learn from you. Again, the old needs the young, and the young needs the old. And so we need to find that Moses, and then it's my job and it's your job to listen to them and to have an open heart and be faithful. But it doesn't even stop there, because we also have to look for those Joshuas in our lives. Man, we have to look for those Joshuas, because there's something that those Joshuas need from you. I'm telling you, there are giftings in you. There is knowledge and wisdom inside of you that someone else needs. So let me ask you this morning, who can you pour your life into? I mean, who do you have in your life that you can reproduce yourself into? You know, for me as a pastor, my responsibility is to pour myself into all of you, into our staff, into our leaders, into all of you as a congregation to help empower you and equip you to become everything that God's called you to become. But then I think in even a more direct way, in a more personal way, to identify who are those Joshuas in my life. Who are those that it's not going to be good enough for Scott just to stand up here and to speak out to all of you, but I'm literally going to have to pull those people close to me and begin investing my life into them. Who are those Joshuas in my life? And I'm telling you, there's a lot of Joshuas out there. There are a lot of people out there who need what you have inside of you, but you have to look for them. So here's your assignment. School started back up for our kids, so I'm going to help you feel that a little bit. Here's your assignment. And this might take you weeks. It might even take you months. It might even take you a year or so. But first of all, I want you to go out, and I want you to find that Moses in your life. And that might require you to break out of your comfort zone, but I want to encourage you to look around you. Be intentional. And if you can't find any, then you need to ask yourself why. Because it's possible that you're not putting yourself in the right places to be able to connect with those like Moses. Because often, I'll tell you, those relationships, and I've seen it happen here over and over again, those relationships are oftentimes formed right in places like this, in faith communities like the Orchard. Some of you, there's a huge handful of you who are getting ready to join small groups. That is a great first step. Many of you have just taken that step in your life to serve and get involved and plugged in. You just have no idea. I mean, I tell you what, you may meet your Moses serving on a welcome team. You may meet your Moses working production or working in our nursery or wherever. You might meet that Moses in your life. But I'll tell you, if you don't take the step, if you don't start looking, you'll never meet him. And then the second part of your assignment is to be on the lookout for your Joshua. And let me just say, moms and dads, listen. Don't think just in terms of your children. Don't think in terms of just your children. Because it's easy to think about pouring into our children. And you know what? Yes, that's a responsibility you have. That's not even optional for you. You're called to pour into the life of your children, and that's your responsibility. But think beyond your children. Think of the people that are two, three, four generations beyond them. Because your life, your troubles, your lessons, your gifts from God are all things that God can use to impact and bless people long after you leave planet Earth. And just imagine the imprint that your life could make. I mean, imagine if you and me and all of us, imagine if we were to all live this Moses and Joshua cycle. I mean, imagine a life that continues to live on after you die. Imagine a life that reaches down through time and impacts people that you will never even meet in your life. Imagine a world 13 generations from now that has your fingerprint on it. Let's pray this morning. Would you just take a moment right where you're at this morning, and would you just take what you've just heard and just ask God to get this deep down inside of you? Just take a moment. Would you do that just in your own way? Just say, God, help me to get it. Help me to get it. And as we leave from this place today, I really hope that each of us will take that step in our lives to begin looking for that Moses who can pour into our life their wisdom and their experience and their seasoning. And I really hope and I pray that each one of us would begin looking in our lives for those Joshuas, those people, maybe who are older than us, maybe who are younger than us, but who need someone to pour into their lives. Because just like Moses, God, I think one of the things we have to remember is that the way we create the future is not by building buildings, it's not by building a fortune, it's not by building anything other than people. So God, help us to be faithful to one another and to be faithful to you. In Christ's name, amen.